When a government can confiscate the earnings of the people with no restraint or no limit whatsoever on the amount that government takes, then government has become the master.
Didn't you say that all services were worth at least $5.15, and here there is a service that's being rendered to you personally, which you are not compensating at all?
No, I said to you earlier, unless someone decides that they want to volunteer.
During the election, all this enthusiasm for Bernie Sanders was taking place while people in Venezuela, under a socialist government, were starving. They were breaking into grocery stores to get desperate to get food.
Regulation. What do you think should be the proper income tax rate?
Well, the best would be zero.
Welcome back to another episode of Law and Profits on the Fight Laugh Feast Network. I'm King Ginger, and the mercy of the wicked is cruel. That's right, the mercy of the wicked is cruel. And today is going to be a real drive by the seat of your pants episode. I am about an hour away from having to go to a men's retreat with my church. And last night, which is a night I usually record Law and Profits, me and my wife decided to do an impulse buy, and we impulsively bought a new car. We've been needing one for a while, but last night we just decided, you know what? We just got to do it. So we did, and they take forever. I've never bought a new car before or bought a car from a dealership, and that takes forever. Yeah, they could learn some stuff from McDonald's and really just really, really learn how to speed up that process for sure. It was interesting the fact that in order to be a car salesman, you have to lie so much. And I actually learned this from my pastor, Jeff, who said that he sold cars for about 6 months when he was a teenager. And he said, they lie about everything. And he told me, just don't believe a word they say. And so we went in there and we told them how much we wanted to pay. And they said they couldn't do it. So I just stood up out of my chair and said, I'm sorry, honey. It doesn't look like we're going to get this car. And I shook the guy's hand and he's like, well, wait. And I think I stood up while my wife was still sitting down for like 5 minutes while they like told me the price that we were willing to pay. From the beginning, we told them that was the price we were going to pay. I guess they didn't believe us, but they doubled it. Anyway, we got a brand new, well, not brand new, but it's a 2016 RAV4, and I'm pretty excited about it. It's nice to have a car for my wife that she can drive that I feel like a good provider and man, that she's safe and protected. So anyway, so as I was saying, I'm about to go to a men's retreat with my church. So I want to do an episode. I just Googled this. It's crazy. I just Googled it before the show and I want to talk about it. But I'm just going to tell you the website that it comes from and the title, and I think you're going to be able to figure out exactly how exciting of a randomly improvised show this is going to be. But the website is Sojourners, and the title of the article, it came out yesterday, is The Biblical Values of Ocasio-Cortez's Democratic Socialism. That's right. The Biblical Values of Ocasio-Cortez's Democratic Socialism. So there's all these Bible verses that they mentioned in this article that shows that democratic socialism and the Bible share a strikingly similar version of what constitutes a fair and just society. Oh, Lord, please let me to do this graciously and without unjust anger, because this is some real trash right here. This is some real trash. So let's start off at the beginning. 2 years before his death, Martin Luther King Jr. declared, "We are saying something is wrong with capitalism. We are saying that something is wrong with capitalism. There must be a better distribution of wealth in this country for all of God's children, and maybe America must move towards democratic socialism." That's interesting. That came from Martin Luther King Jr. and the Gospel Coalition and all these people at the top rung of the top rung of Reformed Christianity are pushing for Martin Luther King Jr. as well. It's a tragedy, honestly. It's sad. But maybe there is a reason besides the fact that he did great things in terms of establishing an opposition to racism in our country, which he did. He did a great job at that, but maybe there's a little bit more to it that these guys want. And this is, you know, from Sojourners. This is by a guy named Aubrey Hendricks Jr. I don't know much about him. I can open up a tab real quick. Aubrey Hendricks, PhD, teaches religion and African American studies at Columbia University. He's the author of The Politics of Jesus, Reclaiming the True Revolutionary Nature of Jesus' Teaching and How They've Been Corrupted. So that seems to be who he is. I don't know much more about him. But anyway, let's get into it. Virtually from the day she assumed office, Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and her avowed democratic socialism have been under attack. Much of the condemnation is from the same crowd that so vigorously insisted that America is and always has been a Christian nation. This is quite ironic because democratic socialism and the Bible share strikingly similar vision of what constitutes a fair and just society. Capitalism, however, does not share that vision. Well, it doesn't. Really? Are you serious? The Bible over and over again talks about personal property ownership. It says in the Ten Commandments, thou shall not steal. Let's not forget the importance of that passage. Thou shall not steal. That means that you actually own something and that other people can actually take away the thing that you own. There's two assumptions in that passage. You own something and people can take stuff that you own. And if they do take stuff that you own, it is a sin against God. So again, God owns the whole world and he's given us a dominion over his things. So that means we can own something that God has given us. We own it fair and square. Okay. Anyways, let's continue on with this train wreck of an article. And by the way, I have not read this article yet. I am reading this to you. I literally saw the article. I hit record on the microphone and this is a show today. So let's continue. The Bible and democratic socialism preach that government should enact policies that address the needs of the poor, provide equal access to opportunity, and legislate policies that curb iniquity. Okay. No, it doesn't. And where does it say that? And I'm so glad, one of the things I really love about this article at first glance is that this article has a lot of Bible passages. It's really great because it's all wrong, but it'll be an opportunity. We're going to get into this. But anyway, as Martin Luther King put it, the curse of poverty has no justification in our age. It is socially as cruel and blind as a practice of cannibalism. I completely disagree with that because a lot of people are made righteous through suffering and through being poor. A lot of people are sanctified through that process of being poor. I right now don't have as much money as I would like to have to be able to fulfill my desires for ministry and for the kingdom and stuff like that. I don't have that money yet. God hasn't gifted me with that. I haven't received that check from an investor yet. I'm working hard to accomplish those things. And it is through this struggle of, although I'm not what you say poor, it's through the struggle of not being as wealthy as I would like that God is sanctifying me and teaching me how to be faithful with the money that I do have, how to provide for my wife. All these things are happening as a result of not having as much money. Now, I know that when I say that, there's people out there that's like, oh, but you're white privileged and you make a good amount of money per year compared to people that work at fast food. And then it's like, yeah, but like I worked hard to get to the point that I am now that I have an income like I do. So it's not something that happens overnight. And it was through a long, long process that got me the video production skills that I taught myself, and was able to bring on clients and stuff like that I've been able to do. It took time and effort and work, and it just doesn't come naturally. And I think that God would be quite unpleased if it was just given to me without any effort. I think God takes pleasure in the fact that His men work hard and work the soil of the ground and sweat. I think that's important. So anyway, let's continue. In numerous biblical passages, leaders are admonished to strive for justice and equality in by prioritizing the plight of the impoverished. For example, Psalm 72, 1 through 2, and then 4. I'm actually going to open this up right now because I don't want to know. I want to make sure I know what verse 3 is. I always get nervous when let's see. So why, can I ask you guys a question? Why are Bible websites so complicated to navigate through? I just want Psalm 72, and then it only shows me, come on, here we go. Okay, so, and let's change this to the ESV, guys. I told you this is an unprepped episode, fly by the seat of your pants. Okay, give the king your justice, O God, and the righteous to your royal son. May judge your people with righteousness and your poor with justice. Yes. Let the mountains bear prosperity for the people and the hills in righteousness. May he defend. Oh, see, that's interesting. That was the verse I saw. Let the mountains bear prosperity for the people and the hills in righteousness. Interesting. May he defend the cause of the poor, the people, give deliverance to the children, the needy, and crush the oppressor. Okay, so what we have right away is a changing of definitions. So there's when the Bible says, may he judge your poor with righteousness and your poor with justice, may your people with righteousness and your poor with justice, the implication there is that justice equals socialism. And that's not what it's saying. What it's saying is that if a poor person is murdered, that poor person's family deserves justice from the government, just the same as if a wealthy person is murdered. And if a poor person is innocent of a crime, he doesn't get to go to jail just because he's poor. He receives the same amount of justice as wealthy. And so again, if we go to verse 3, it says, let the mountains bear prosperity for the people and the hills in righteousness. So that one was left out. And I think it's interesting they left that out because that is talking about wealth. Let people be wealthy. Let the mountains bring forth prosperity. That's a post-millennial hope. That there will always be poor among us, as Jesus said, but that what we define as poor will be less and less. Look, today, the people that are poor in America are not poor compared to the people in third world countries in like India or Africa or the West Pacific. So where is it? Eastern Pacific? It's the Pacific Islands. Yeah. So like those nations down there where there's like really poor, like Thailand and stuff like that. Like there's really poor people. The poor people that we have in America probably still eat at McDonald's a few times a month, right? Like they still have a television or a computer or an iPod or an iPhone. Like our poor is not the poor. God has given our nation prosperity. And so that's important to remember. But then it says in verse 4, it says, may defend the cause of the poor of the people, give deliverance to the children of the needy and crush the oppressor. So here we have words like oppressor and giving deliverance. And so the implication here is, see, I believe that the government should help people be wealthy by taking money from the rich, and the rich are the oppressors. But this is not what the Bible is saying, because in verse 3, it gives a declaration that the mountains should bear prosperity for people. Right? So there's an implication there that people should be wealthy, but it's not saying that with the rich person is the evil oppressor here. It can't be saying that. The passage cannot be saying that. Okay, let's continue on with, so essentially there's implications in this passage of what justice is. Justice for sojourners is stealing from the rich and giving it to the poor, whereas justice in Scripture is punishing evil, no matter with someone's rich or poor, which, by the way, the Bible standard of justice, when it says things like the rich shall not give more and the poor shall not pay less, when the Bible says things like that, it's also says those things in accordance with justice. In other words, the rich shouldn't be punished less, and the poor shouldn't be punished more. And that is the context of this. When it's talking about the oppressor of the poor, it's talking about people who take advantage of the poor and imprison them and create prison systems like our nation has today that imprison specifically the poor people and punish the poor people. That is a valid system of injustice, but it has nothing to do with because there are rich people. So anyway, let's continue. He gives, this is all from, which is weird, it's all from Martin Luther King. But anyway, moreover, King, the Bible, and democratic socialism share the same essential concerns. It's interesting he put King and the Bible, as if you don't agree with the Bible, at least Martin Luther King shared this. So let's see. Let's just lost my tab. Okay. Healthcare for all. Jesus modeled universal healthcare by healing everyone who asks, regardless of their gender, nationality, or ability to pay. Great multitudes followed him, mostly poor peasants, and he healed them all. Okay. I'm sorry, guys. It's early in the morning, and I'm reading this, and I don't know why this tickles me so much, but this is just such bad exegesis that because people heal, Jesus healed people, and because those people were poor, that implies healthcare for all. I don't even know how to follow up with this. I don't even know how to follow up with this. And like, you can't even bring this into the context of when Jesus's time, because there wasn't healthcare at all during that time. It wasn't until Jesus came, and then the church went out after Pentecost, that hospitals even happened. It was a result of Christians taking care of the poor. Now, I do believe that healthcare should be a demonstrably charitable act. I do believe that. I think I think Ron Paul has a quote when he said that it used to be when he was practicing that the Catholics had all the hospitals, and if someone was too poor and couldn't pay, they would just treat them anyway. And that was based on charity. So a lot of the hospitals we see today have names like First Presbyterian in New York and like some of the major hospitals. It's because the churches were there and they were doing it, but they were running them as businesses. Like that's why our healthcare system is so great, is because they were both profitable and they were also charitable. That's why our healthcare industry was so great. And it's not because Jesus just healed people, therefore we should take money from everybody so that everybody can have free access to healthcare. That's insane. The next one, he says, a fair wage. Profits consistently excoriated those exploiting their employees. For example, woe to him who builds his house by unrighteousness and his upper rooms by injustice, who makes his neighbors work for nothing and does not give them their wages. Okay. So that passage is obviously about slavery. It's not talking about injustice in the sense of this person doesn't get paid. This passage is talking about people who don't give them pay at all. They work for nothing. Now, Sojourners is going to take that word nothing and say $5.50 an hour is nothing. $6 an hour, $7 an hour, that's nothing. $15 an hour is nothing. Well, that is not the case. If you go to the parable of the vineyard worker, and if you've listened to this show for any amount of time, we've gone through this passage a lot. The parable of the vineyard worker, the premise there is the vineyard worker has a right to do with his money as he pleases, and he can pay his employees as he pleases. That's the natural aspect of that parable, and the natural aspect of a parable has to be true, or else the spiritual story that it's trying to tell you is not true. So anyway, so again, that passage in Jeremiah is talking about slavery, outright slavery. They're not getting any wages. They're getting paid nothing. It's not talking about McDonald's, where two people equally agree to work for $7 an hour, the employer and the employee. They make an employee contract and they agree to work for that pay. And then that's what that's what they covenant together in. And so they're not working for nothing. They're working for exactly what they agreed to. And the employer has a right to determine the worth of his employee in accordingly, as he wants. The employer can determine that one employee is more valuable than another. That is just how it works. And the employee can also come to the conclusion that the employer doesn't think he's valuable, and he can go pound sand, tell the boss to go pound sand and quit, or give him a raise. And then if the employer says, I'm not going to give you a raise, then he knows exactly how valuable he is to that company. Now, again, in these instances, they're not getting paid for nothing. They're getting wages that they agreed to. This is not wicked. Anyway, let's go on to the next section. A minimum income for everyone. The book of Leviticus is clear. There should be no poor among you. If any of your neighbors become poor and you are unable to support themselves among you, help them so they can continue among you. And that list, Leviticus 25, 35 through 36, is 10 verses, but that's only one sentence. So let's see exactly what we're talking about here. Oh, sorry. You know, it is. If your brother becomes poor and cannot maintain himself with you, you shall support him as though he were a stranger and a sojourner, and he shall live with you. Take no interest from him or profit, but fear your God, that your brother may live beside you. If your brother becomes poor and cannot maintain himself with you, you shall support him as though he were a stranger and a sojourner, and he shall live with you. Take no interest from him or profit, but fear your God, that your brother may live beside you. Yeah, okay. It's kindness for poor people. Yeah, completely. I completely agree with that passage. I completely agree with everything that passage says. The one thing I don't see in that passage is any instruction for the government to do it or for the government to mandate it. It's a completely charitable act. If there's someone who is poor that lives among you, to help them and support them, that is the role of the church. That is the function of the church. The problem with sojourners is they're trying to take a function of the church and they're trying to give it to the state. And everybody is trying to give the state these things. Everybody. So again, there's nowhere in that passage that says it's a command for the government. It's just implied. This is an amazing, amazing a bit of proof texting. Fair treatment for workers. The book of Deuteronomy declares, you shall not oppress a hired servant who is poor and needy, whether he is one of your brothers or the immigrants who are in your land. Yeah, okay, I agree. You shouldn't oppress a hired servant who is poor and needy. Yeah, so, okay, so here's an interesting take on this. Let's say you hire someone who's poor for $2 an hour, and you hire him at $2 an hour because he needs a job, and you technically could pay him more, and he's technically worth more, but you're taking advantage of him because he's poor. And the Bible, I think, condemns that. I think you should pay people fairly in accordance with what their labor is worth. So if you have a guy and he's working really hard and he's really dedicated employee and he's just like busting his butt for you and totally loyal, but then you realize, you know, the guy kind of lives on the street. He doesn't have a lot of money. So he kind of will work for me for anything. I'm going to take advantage of that. That's not the way a Christian should function in his business. A Christian should pay his employees well. And so there's that. And then, but also, again, we have to look at the fact that that isn't, if you hire somebody for $2 an hour because he really needs the work and you're willing to pay him $2 an hour and he's willing to work for $2 an hour, if that's the agreement you guys make, there's no deception or wickedness in that. You guys made that agreement together. So there's two parts of this. There's one, that this guy comes to you and says $2 an hour and you say, okay, great. And then after he's working for you some time, you go, man, this guy is like really valuable to the company. I should pay him more. And you should. You should. Like you should pay an employee what he's worth. Again, none of this has anything to do with the government being involved. None of this has anything to do. Okay, so let's get back into this. We're almost done with this article. It says, so why is Democratic, sadly in our capitalist society, many American workers find themselves subject to caprice and greed of corporate elites, many of whom annually earn in excess of 300 times the salaries of their average workers. I just want to say, so they own it. They can do with it as they want. Democratic socialism repudiates such power imbalances. Under it, workers would have a greater say in determining their working conditions and receive a much more equitable share of the profits generated by their labor. That is not for the workers to decide because they do not own the company. They are not owners in the company. Okay, that's just theft at that point. For the workers to get together and to conspire against the owner of the company who has built this thing, and say that they demand that they get an equal pay, it's insanity. And I would fire every single one of those employees that even thought that way. I'd fire every one of them because I need people who are capitalists working for my company. I don't need that sort of I deserve this because I'm here mentality. And it's not a Christian attitude. It's an attitude of covetousness. It's an attitude of sin. And they need to be rebuked for that and should be brought up for church discipline. Again, so why is democratic socialism demonized? Because it's unscriptural. One reason, its proponents' insistence on economic fairness and social responsibility threatens the power of those who wield America's economic reins. Granted, capitalism has generated immense wealth, markedly improved global living standards, and made life more comfortable for many. Yes, it has. Yet capitalism has also caused immeasurable suffering, systematic oppression, and debilitating social alienation. It sponsored America's shameful trade in human chattel, exploits millions of workers who aren't paid a living wage, and leaves many to sicken and die because they cannot afford health care. Capitalism rewards, in fact, depends upon ruthless self-interest. Okay. First off, capitalism does not depend upon ruthless self-interest. It does not. Capitalism requires a mutually agreed upon self-interest. For example, if I pay my employee well, he is going to work harder for me. He's going to be more loyal. He's not going to leave. If I make my prices too high, people aren't going to shop there. If I sell them a defective product, people aren't going to shop there. Ruthless, self-interested capitalism doesn't work. It doesn't work if capitalism is the way in which sojourners describe it, we would have never gotten where we are. But that's because capitalism isn't that way. McDonald's, I guarantee you, if there was a way, McDonald's could sell you a cheeseburger for 5 cents an hour, for 5 cents a burger, and then pay their employees an incredibly high minimum wage, they would do it. Like, that's what they want to do. And McDonald's is probably one of the greatest businesses in the world for figuring out a way to streamline everything to such a degree that they can sell you a dollar burger. It's a really miraculous work what those guys have done in terms of streamlining the food industry. I mean, they've been able to provide very cheap meals to the poorest of neighborhoods for years. And it's a miracle what they've done. And they've realized that if they keep their prices down and their profits high, that they can continue to do this. And there is a sort of a mutual agreement here, right? We're going to sell cheap burgers, and in exchange, they're not going to be the highest quality in terms of like for your health, but you're going to get a lot of calories really quickly and very cheaply. And I think McDonald's is probably one of the best in the world at providing the most amount of calories for the cheapest amount of money. And we should praise God for that, actually. So anyways, so all this chattels, you know, blah, 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 capitalism rewards, depends on ruthless self-interest, not true. It values profits over people. Again, this is not capitalism. Capitalism has to value people in order to get profits. That's true capitalism. This idea that it values profits over people is ridiculous. However, it does not bring people up to an unbiblical status of reward at the expense of profit. So, for example, I'm not going to pay someone $50 an hour just out of charity. They have to be willing to work hard to earn that sort of salary. So again, this idea that it values profits over people is just a lie. It's just a flat lie. It's somebody who doesn't understand how capitalism works. And then dispenses power without responsibility and treats human beings like commodities. Well, okay. And it says, he quotes another Bible verse, "The Lord enters into judgment against the elders and leaders of his people, saying, The plunder from the poor in your houses, what do you mean by crushing my people and grinding the faces of the poor?" Again, okay. All right. Just paying someone $15 an hour in a nation that has a dollar is more than most people make in a year is not considered poor or defrauding somebody. So again, if Christians took the Bible seriously on this point, activist politicians like Ocasio-Cortez would not excite such vigorous opposition, and America would not have to endure disastrous depredations of Trump's presidency. What a socialist maniac this guy is. Aubrey M. Hendricks. I would love to debate him. That would be fun. I don't know who he is, though, but it'd be fun to have a discussion with him. What do you say? All right, guys. Well, I am off to the men's retreat. Thank you for this, letting me do this fly by the seat of my pants episode. I hope you enjoyed it, and I look forward to seeing you guys next week.